He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Mark, and this is Car Keys.
I'd like to start off this week's show by discussing Ford, because there's been, as usual, there's mixed messages coming out about what really is going on.
I just saw something, you know, and again, this is the problem with journalism, quote, quote, but something that said Ford is discontinuing all...
Let me get to that. Last week, Jim Hackett said Ford is cutting out passenger cars and leaving one in place, and the Taurus, the Fusion, and the Fiesta or something were going to be going the way of...
the dodo bird.
Whatever. This morning, what's his name? Another guy in Ford, I had the name a minute ago, said, oh, no, we're not going out of the passenger car business. We're just reformulating everything. The Taurus will be around through production February of 2019. So anybody who wants a Taurus... better order one if they want a spec'd one, or they better go find one if they want another one sometime by the end of 2019, because it's going out of production in February. The Fusion is going to be around for a couple of more years. So Jim Hackett really blows it by getting out in the airwaves and telling people that Ford's not going to produce Fusions, Tauruses, and other. And so people cannot buy them because they think they're going to become obsolete. They aren't.
But this is... I'm not necessarily going to, you know, unless you were there for the entire speech or the interview, you don't know whether or what nuance was included in it. So obviously, whatever was said last week, everybody looked at and they went, boy, that really wasn't the message we were trying to convey. So here we are now going backwards. And this is the whole problem that we currently have, I think.
You know, Ford can do what it's going to do, but to have it blown out there, blasted out there over the airways the way Jim Hackett did it, is not good for Ford, just from a publicity and from a manufacturer who wants to continue to sell cars, that they make an announcement that they're going to stop selling and producing. Because people don't understand that cars last far outlast their production.
Well, not to mention the cars that are coming back into production now that were discontinued for lack of interest. Your view, Jay?
Well, several things.
Promptly.
Ready, listeners?
First of all, Ford has been a troubled auto manufacturer for some time now. I think the problem with the Taurus and the Fusion is a problem that's been around for as long as the Fusion has been on the market, because the Taurus and the Fusion kind of overlap totally. The Taurus is supposed to be the large size Ford and the Fusion the mid-size. But if you put...
Talk to me, for example, I would not even know the difference.
Well, the Fusion is actually a larger car inside. It's a more comfortable car. It has more passenger room, more
headroom. Why would I want a Fusion?
Why would you want a Fusion?
You just did like five words or less. And why would I want a Taurus?
Well, first of all, the Fusion to me is the only one anybody should buy is a hybrid. But they don't, because it's expensive.
Right, okay. So that's in my...
So they're getting rid of one of their best potential cars, except that if they're going to reformulate the way... what's his name? God, he was on the news this morning. Anyways, is going to do, there are going to be reformulated passenger cars, because people want passenger cars. The entire state of Florida is not in SUV land, I'm pretty sure. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure Arizona is in SUV land either. Jay has been out there. He can tell us. But a lot of Arizona is similar to the populations are similar to Florida and the South. Maybe we should get into the fact that they're aging and they don't want SUVs because they can't climb up into them.
Hold on. Let's get back to Ford for a second.
Okay.
The state may have created some ripples, but the truth is it doesn't really matter. All these cars and SUVs are now built on the same platforms.
Right.
And you can build... an SUV on the same platform as you build a car, and if today we can sell cars, Ford can build cars, or anybody else for that matter, and the day they need to build an SUV...
They use the same platform.
And they can go back to building a car if they need to.
All right. So
it's not a huge deal. I see, and Robin and I talked about this a few minutes ago, part of the problem I see is this classification of cars and trucks that we have that's typical of... our U.S. market. Everywhere else in the world, we just talk about vehicles. Because there is sometimes no difference between a car and a truck. You take some of the wagons out there, like the Audi Allroad. I believe it's classified as a truck, and yet all it is a wagon that's been hiked a couple inches, and it's classified as a truck. Same thing with the Volvo wagons. Some of them are trucks, some of them are cars. There really isn't a lot of difference between some of the cars and some of the trucks.
I think your Forester SUV is a truck.
I believe Subaru, so.
For example,
I do not know whether the Outback is or not, but Subaru is pretty much an all truck manufacturer right, as opposed to a car manufacturer.
And that's a really important distinction, considering that on TV, no one's saying you're buying a truck, but rather a car.
So let's put all these vehicles together, and actually, I'm trying to get to a subject that I wanted to talk a little bit about is you know, brands and what is selling and what are the trends, and what are the sales numbers by brand? And there's a particular brand that I'd like to talk about, which used to be the standard of the world, quote unquote, and that was their trademark, and that's Cadillac. And Cadillac is also a company that's a brand, because they are, of course, GM owned. It's not a company, it's a division of GM. But Cadillac is in search of an identity, and has been for, I would say, the last 15 years.
In terms of a vehicle.
Well, in terms of a vehicle, an image, and
but perception-wise.
Lincoln as well.
But perception-wise, because this is interesting. Perception-wise, the term Cadillac is so into the culture that it's the best version. It's like, hey, this is the Cadillac of hammers. This is the Cadillac of
GM.
So, to the point that's been made by some professionals, and I agree, Cadillac has kind of shot themselves in the foot in trying to turn what was a luxury brand and a standard of luxury into a high-performance brand similar to BMW, Mercedes, or Audi. And, of course, everybody wants to go after younger buyers. And, yes, Cadillac had a problem with the age of buyers.
But at least they were buying.
But at least they were buying. And the older buyers actually have more money.
Had the money, right.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
No, one of my favorite marketing conversations ever, and I will put this out here just as a reminder, is it was a magazine editor, very well-known magazine, and the guys were in sales, and this, and she finally turned and said, excuse me, who has more money to spend on your product, me or my assistant?
Yep. So... The Cadillac brand is being diluted, I think, and we also have a bunch of models that don't really
fit.
There are too many models that, well, the ATS and the CTS are similar cars. It's a large compact and a medium and a small medium car. You can't tell an ATS from a CTS, and then you've got an XTS and you've got a CT6, and it's all this
sounds like the MTA.
Well, we've been saying this for a while on this show, or at least I have, about the similarity between models. You could not tell a Hyundai Elantra from a Hyundai Sonata from 100 yards for several years, and it's still not too different today in 2018, although they're supposedly trying to differentiate it. The Corolla and the Camry also had the same identity from the front-end problem until this year, where there's some differentiation. So Jay's right, and the car manufacturers, what's happening is some backfiring is going on, and people have finally gotten fed up looking at all these ovoid egg-shaped sedans, the Sonatas, the Fusions, the Chevrolet Impalas, and the like. And I think that may be something behind why Ford is going to eliminate the Fusion and reprogram, package things, and bring out things that they'll call cars, but they may have different shapes. I believe Toyota is beginning to re-square some of its sedans. Audi may be beginning to re-square the body of some of its sedans. On the other hand, the new A5 is about as slippery as anything Audi's put out. But the A4, the A6, and I don't know what the new A8 is going to look like. There's still some room for a squareness of the body, an upright sort of rear section instead of the slope going down from the middle of the driver's seat backs down to the trunk line.
My kingdom for more than a porthole has a rear window.
Yes. Well, you look at the Range Rover Velar, for example, and you've got a slit out the rear window of that vehicle.
That was just made me sick anyway.
You sit in that, and you can't. You look in your rearview mirror, and you're looking at a slit instead of a big wall of glass out to see what's coming up behind you and that kind of thing.
But that's okay, because you'll have a camera.
By saying, "Well, we've got all these new technology screens here, telling you where the cars are without having to look."
I was going to say that mirrors are a thing of the will soon be a thing of the past.
I understand.
Will be replaced by cameras,
which is all right, except that, as you know, that messes with people's brains. So the more that you take away the need to actually look at your exterior world, and the more that you look at your screen, the difference in your association and connection is.
The brain adapts. No, and I say this seriously. I mean,
adapts if you've got one car. And you don't, and that's all you drive for your history of car ownership, because it has to adapt. If you keep an old car that doesn't have all this stuff, and you get a new car that does, and you switch back and forth the way Jay and I do, and the way other people who have two cars but they don't have two new cars every time, mm-hmm. you have that problem that you're bringing up about the confusion of how to deal with all this technology and how your brain functions in comfort level or discomfort level when you're backing up, for example, one car with a camera, the other with your neck craning or looking out the windows because you don't have the camera to see what's
Well, the expectation, of course, is that you stop, using the car with the window and start using the car with the camera. And that's wonderful, except that it's not always practicable. And meanwhile, you do need to still teach people, if they're going to drive, even though you can be autonomous, to look around just at their environment.
Jay, who teaches people how to drive, is getting ready to mustering up some thoughts about that comment.
Several things come to mind. I think we are going to be using we have started using
of course.
Cameras. We use them as rearview mirrors when we back up. I think rearview mirrors will be used. Cameras will be used in rearview mirrors in race cars. They already are, because you can't see out of a race car.
Anyway.
They put cameras.
Right.
Side mirrors can be seen being replaced by cameras on a lot of prototypes and concept cars when we go to trade shows. And there are reasons to do that. It makes a car more aerodynamic. And my point is, you can, with time, we should be able to bring those mirrors back in more in the center of where our eyes are looking. And back to the greater picture of looking around, I always say you have to keep your eyes moving when you're driving. You
totally.
Should always be aware of what's around you. When you're on the highway, you should know what car is behind you, what car is on your right, what car is on your left. I know when I'm driving, if all of a sudden I don't see a car that I knew was there,
should look to where
exactly.
what happened to
yeah.
it.
Doesn't allow any time for distracted driving either, though, with this
right.
kind of awareness factor. And Jay is absolutely correct. The way the drivers are, and we'll get to that, but maybe before the show's over, the drivers are terrible in our country, and they're not getting any better. The driver education programs, as I understand them, are they're certainly not adequate in training. I watched a driver education person go by me. I was trying to get out of the driveway of my office yesterday, and whenever I see a driver education car coming, and I do, and I can look and sort of concentrate on what the teacher is doing versus what the driver is doing. I just wonder what is not going on, because
so I'm changing my attitude towards student driver cars when I see them. I used to say, oh, let's give them room, let's be nice. No, we need to be jerks and create situations for them so that they can learn.
Yeah. No, I totally understand.
I'm being a little facetious,
but
really all that much.
The point is, but this is critical. We have a generation now. Kids who are coming up now are way more interested in learning how to do things, just specifically because they've had all the screen all the time. But you've still got a generation that needs the experience. You still need you're going to be a race car driver. You need your hours behind the wheel. I don't care how many video games you've watched.
There was an editorial about electric bikes, e-bikes, that I just read recently to go to this point. when you learn to drive, you learn by doing after you've been taught
right.
what you're supposed to, how you're supposed to do it. E-bikes, meaning electric bikes, are the coming thing in lots of areas. The problem with e-bikes is they're more complex as far as understanding what you need to do when you're riding an e-bike that's being partially self-propelled by an electric motor as opposed to your pedal action. And
it's the same thing as driving in a hybrid car.
No, it's not, because we're talking about e-bikes when you're biking along areas that the pedestrians are also using. And e-bikes don't slow down the way manual pedal bikes slow down as quickly. So you have to really be very attentive and focused on what you're doing. This is what the content of the editorial was all about, is how to learn how to ride an e-bike as opposed to ride a pedal bike. And how do you, what is the behavioral difference that you have to understand when you're riding an e-bike in the middle of traffic, pedestrian areas, and the like, as opposed to a pedal bike, which are manually always doing something manually to create speed and evenness of speed, velocity.
And as I was trying to go from Sharon to Falls Village yesterday without incident, going over a hilly road that has no particular sight line where you have to be conscious, I encountered a non-e-bike rider in the middle of the
roadway.
And
the car roadway,
and someone else backing out
of a driveway
in the lane that you would have to be to, for one of the three of us not to get killed. But you know,
There are lots of things going on in that particular incident.
It's almost like, oh right, you come and you have a story about it instead of, guys, there still are rules of the road.
Yeah, but the guy backing out probably didn't see the bike. I mean, that's a lot of things that all have to come together in one thing to be sure you avoid an
accident.
Maybe he didn't have a camera.
Okay,
maybe
in fairness,
he didn't turn his neck.
In fairness, he had stopped. He had stopped because he saw that the guy was in the middle of the road and you couldn't see whether anything was coming one way or the other. So that's the good news, but camera or not.
Rules of the road also. I mean, I saw bicyclists over the weekend that were riding the wrong way on the road. They're supposed to ride with the traffic, not against the traffic. And these bicyclists actually, and the walkers are supposed to walk opposite the traffic so they can see what happens if somebody loses control of the car and comes careening at them.
That's the argument that the biker riding
counter
traffic will use too. And there is some logic.
There's logic to each one of them. The point is that there are rules that they're standardized. I'm not saying that they work in all situations, but at least if everyone knows what the rules are, then they can be creative. What were you going to say earlier, since, you know, as usual, we're running out of time, but what were you going to say earlier about drivers or some types of drivers, or was it you? Just what you encounter?
They're terrible. Most drivers, I get back, and I'm going maybe on a rant here. Driver education, continuous driver education, recertification, quote unquote. I've said this before. We do a bunch of things in life where we need to be recertified on a periodic basis, whether it be in real estate, whether it be in teaching skiing. Every year, every 2 years, we go back and we take classes. In driving, which is one of the most, when I say dangerous things that we do, bad things can happen as a consequence of bad driving. There's absolutely nothing we need to do to keep our licenses. And with time, we acquire bad habits. And even very good drivers need to be reminded once in a while of certain things they do or don't do.
Well, the only time drivers are recertified in any kind of form is if they've gotten a ticket or a drunken driving situation and they're sent to retraining school by the judge as part of their rehabilitation,
and
so
I
to
think
speak.
That it, I think it has everything ticket. To do with how driving came to, you know, teaching skiing, teaching, that's one thing, because you have to be recertified in education. Driving, you know, originally you had your method of conveyance, whether it was a cart horse or a, so it was just as you graduate, quote, as you graduated, moved into your vehicle, once you could drive your vehicle and you were signed off to drive your vehicle, off you went to drive the vehicle for the rest of your life. It's just, and at some point, you're right, something should possibly be done about it. I think it has to do, though, with how it evolved over just the course of life.
But let's not kid ourselves. It's never going to happen.
Okay. Right.
Can we move to something? You were reading statistics. Do you have anything about that that you were reading?
It's a little complicated.
All right, okay. So we'll hold off on that. Just a quick comment. I had Robin something. We were talking about this last week about the Tesla Model 3. The only reason, because apparently Tesla's earnings or something are very much in the front
well,
of...
Well, we touched upon the whole problem is Elon Musk pulled this April 1st, supposed to be April Fool's joke about his company, and it was really a stupid thing to have been done.
Sort of like
I have been ranting about Elon Musk's ability to sidetrack the public from the reality of his company woes with to do with the Tesla car company, because he's got so many fingers in so many different pies, from rockets to underground super speed tunnels underneath cities, electric trucks before they got the cars done, new models of electric cars before they got the existing models on the road and in people's hands, and the like. And yet he sits there and distracts you when people are trying to focus on the real problem. And you've given me this article in...
it was from The Economist.
From The Economist, which I haven't read fully. But they're really laying it out that, you know, there's some real issues there that he's just trying to avoid the reality of understanding that he's got to focus on it. And I think the car is fabulous. Jay, I think, thinks of Model S is fabulous. And,
it is.
And he's actually seen the Model 3 out in Arizona, which is new. And I think you thought it was pretty good looking. You didn't get closer and able to drive it. But all the reviews of the driver reviews have been sensational about that car.
It is a great car. I mean, the Tesla is a great car. The S is a great car. The 3, I think, is going to be a great car.
There's an X, few X's
the
around
X,
here now.
The SUV, I'm personally not a big fan of. But
I'm not either.
It's a personal point of view, and it's still a great vehicle. But I think the competition is slowly creeping up on Tesla. And on the higher end of the market, you have Porsche coming out with a vehicle that's going to probably beat the Model S in range and performance and be right on the money with price. Jaguar's coming out with an SUV that's going to be the I-Pace is going to be very
E-Pace,
similar.
Right.
I-Pace. The E-Pace is it's confusing.
Yeah.
Going to compete with the X.
BMW is going to have them too. I mean,
so there's competition coming out. Now, Elon Musk doesn't really care. I mean, he's all for the competition. If somebody buys him out someday, he's probably still going to be okay.
Well,
because
I don't
he'll
know
go
anybody's
out.
Going to buy him out with the issues that are going on, but and that's what everybody likes to do with startup companies, like to bring them into great success, and then they get bought out, and then they can go relax for the rest of their lives or do something.
Well, he already can relax for the rest of his life, so he's got plenty.
He can,
of,
but we know he doesn't. I mean, he's
right.
He's been doing this.
I'm just curious about yes, exactly. 55 seconds. I'm just curious about whether I should buy that car. Go on. Don't answer that question. What else?
Sure,
what, whatever else you
it,
want
go
to
ahead.
Talk about. But how long do I have to wait to get it?
Well, the Model 3, a long time.
Right. That's what I'm asking. Anyway, to be continued. What else in the final minutes, Robin Leach?
Just that I don't have a whole lot more to close on. Jay may have something to close on.
Oh.
Got plenty to talk about next week.
All right. Yes, he is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarc, and this is Car Keys.